the voice of McDuttah County, WTND LP McComb.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence, also known as SETI, is not the only group sending signals into outer space. We too are hoping there's life on other planets. From the internet to space, the universe, and beyond, this is the Wookiee Satellite Radio Network, AMC 7, Transponder 5, 7.5 wideband audio. Brought to you by Superstar Netlink Turnervision. Their number is 1-800-395-9557.
For the best in talk, tunes, and more, this is RFD.
But White Sands and the Pentagon both have state-of-the-art anti-missile grids. How the hell did they get through?
Somebody hacked into one of our satellites for guidance and control.
Oh, no.
Hey, I don't believe that any system is totally secure.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
I bet my Wookiee.
Tech Biz, 100% voltage-free radio.
Have come from the planet of the apes. He's a Chewbacca, space tracker, a lady delight.
Hello there. Welcome to Tech This for the week of whatever the date is here.
Well, today is the 29th of April, 2005.
Wow, that's amazing.
And this is Tech This, and we are live on all of our affiliates. Of course, we're here on WTNDLP Macomb and Radio Free Dish Nuts.
The Wookiees Satellite Radio Network.
All right, GE7 Transponder 5, 7.5 megahertz wideband audio. And in just a moment, I will be bringing on our guests onto the air here. We will be speaking with several of them, and they'll have to introduce themselves because I already forgot their names. We have Mark Spencer, one of the people development of Asterisk and with Digium. And there were some others. They have set up a teleconference, and there's like several of them on there. It sounds like they were having a party when I joined in. when I dialed the number, I just dropped right into the conference, and they were chit-chatting about stuff. And I've got a room on the IRC. We are in irc.dishnuts.net. That is our chat room, our chat server. Once you're connected to that IRC, and if any of the phone guys, the Asterisk people on hold, have access to IRC, you're welcome to join the chat as well. It is irc.dishnuts.net. Once connected to that server, you want to join the room Pound Wookiee. That's W0KIE, Whiskey 0 Kilo India Echo. And I have set up a separate room, although it's not like a big deal in IRC, called Pound Questions. And that way, if I miss a question in the main room, you could put it in Pound Questions, and maybe I'll see it. And there's already like two or three questions in there, so that's a cool thing. Anyway, I don't know if Daryl, did you say you had some information, or you didn't get any, or something?
About what?
Well, bios and other information. I think you said.
Well, I know that the lady that I talked to. I hate to admit this. And I probably shouldn't admit it on the air, but I will, because after all, I am I'm nothing but honest. I received this phone call from a very nice lady from their people, and she told me all the pertinent information, and I wrote down the number to call to get into that bridge and everything, and I'm sure she told me all that pertinent information that I'm supposed to remember. But I was not exactly with it at the time that this occurred because I had been up late that night before and I was
a little too much party.
Too sleepy.
You got a phone call from their people? I mean, are they Asterisksonians?
Asterisksonians, yeah, that's
versus
it.
Versus Octothorpians. Yeah, we'll have to ask them, will the competing product be Octothorpe? Well, anyway, while we don't let too much time go by, let's go ahead and bring them up. And if you guys are there, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Ah, it sounds like it's working. I'm always pleased when things work.
What was the name of the channel again?
Well, the main room where all the activity is Pound Wookiee. That's W0KIE.
Okay, that's so it. W-O-K-I-E isn't going to get it.
No, nope. You need the numeral zero.
It's a ham call, basically.
I see.
The owner of the satellite network is that particular ham, and I named the network that way. And we sort of followed suit.
Yep. We are on the phone, by the way, Byron. That's why it sounds like we're on the phone.
Yes. Well, actually, it was just I was commenting that the people in the actual studio sound like they're on phones too now.
Yeah, well, that's the curse of trying to balance studio audio with phone line audio.
Yep, you'll get that from time
to
time.
See, I am trying very hard to punch as much audio back down the phone line as I possibly can.
Well, see, you know, that's the problem. You have to be nice to the phones. You can't be going around and punching the phone.
Well, we want to welcome you guys.
Yeah, thanks for being with us.
And we will, like I said, in our chat room, we will have some questions and things for you. But we want to kind of at least get some history behind all of this. Like I said, there's quite a few people in our listening group that either have Asterisk or have aspiring, you know, plans to put one together.
Yeah, like me. I'm not having much luck.
So
you're trying to do it in Windows.
Yeah. Well, don't tell them that. Shh.
Like I said, we are kind of freeform, so if you guys maybe just want to start a little bit, give a little background, and then we can just kind of go from there, if that's all right.
Okay, great. Well, where do we want to start? You want to know about what Asterisk is, or how it came about, or
yes.
Where would you like to start?
That's, yeah, both of those sound good.
Okay. So, I guess I'll start with kind of how it came about. When I, back in 1999, way back when I was in college, I decided that I would start a business doing Linux technical support. And so, you know, I started with like $4,000 and decided I was going to make a company because I didn't know any better. And one of the things was that I needed a telephone system. And, of course, these things tend to be very expensive, and I didn't really want to go buy one, so I just kind of figured I'd make one. And that's kind of how I got started with Asterisk. So I got some equipment from a company that I co-opted at called AdTran, and kind of put something together and started a project. And for better or for worse, I don't tend to think small. So right from the start, I wanted Asterisk to do everything, which is where the name comes from, the wild card in Unix.
Yes, it's come to think of it, it's actually sort of a wild card even in DOS. So
yes, it is in DOS too. But, I mean,
but of course, you wouldn't think about DOS. No.
Never.
That's okay. I'm all for open source stuff whenever possible.
Well, cool. So yeah, that's pretty much how it got around. So nowadays, Asterisk is let's see. The official definition is that Asterisk is a hybrid packet voice and TDM PBX and IVR platform with ACD functionality. Okay.
So, and if you have any idea what that means, you know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Most of that went right over my head.
I know
right.
Some of it.
Well, I was going to say the trick is to break it up into several parts. It's not so bad.
Right. I know what PBX is.
Right.
Right. So, well, let's start with actually from the first part. Let's start with the piece I actually left out, which is that Asterisk is open source. So I don't know if your audience is already familiar with open source. Do I need to go to that?
Most of it is, but it wouldn't hurt to give a general knowledge because there could be a new listener who doesn't know.
I really hate it when I get open source all over my body.
Yeah,
you know, that just
yeah.
really sucks.
Okay, yeah. So open source basically means that in addition to distributing the actual binary code that can run on the machine, we distribute the source code for the software, which is what the programmers actually type in to make it run, so that other people can customize and tweak and improve and fix bugs and just generally make the whole thing better. And they can freely, freely redistribute the software when they're done.
Cool.
All right, so it's open source, which is kind of exciting because obviously it's very inexpensive. It lets you customize it as much as you need to. And, I mean, it puts you as the user of the software in control and lets it do whatever you want to do. The next part of this is that Asterisk supports packet voice or voice over IP, which is a sort of newer way of transmitting audio data in which the audio is recorded into packets and then transmitted in little sections that represent some small amount of time. The next part is that Astra supports TDM, and TDM is the old school way the phone system works, which is basically, if you, I'm sorry?
It stands for time division multiplexing.
Right, it does stand for time division multiplexing. But basically, if you think about it, way back in the day when they had the old cord boards, like you see the operator where they're just kind of plugging one phone into another, the idea was that from end to end, there was an actual circuit that was constructed where the two people talking together actually had a physical wire that connected them. And as the phone network evolved, essentially the structure has stayed more or less the same. You use time division multiplexing to send more than one circuit across the same physical wire, but it's all a literal circuit switch network. And then packet voice, which would include voice over IP as well as voice over ATM, is sort of the new model. And one of the things that's interesting about Asterisk is that it supports both the old school telephony technologies, including just regular analog phone lines, T1s, ISDN connections, and so on, as well as all the new voice over IP stuff, including five different voice over IP protocols, actually six now, which are SIP, EECS, H323, Skinny, MGTP, and Nortel Unistem. And the next part of that is that Asterisk has PBX functionality, which is just your normal phone system. And then it also has interactive voice response, which is where you call your credit card number and you get to find out, you know, how much people have fraudulently charged on your card. And it also supports ACD, which is automatic call distribution, which is where you call your credit card company and get to wait on hold for 30 minutes while they remind you how important your call is.
Right.
So basically, it does all of the things of the modern phone system pretty much, at least all the things that the customer tends to come into contact with.
Right. That's basically it. It's designed to be the one-stop shop for all of telephony, and it's open source, so it gets used all over the place. In fact, we have a kind of a funny story about this guy in Uganda, and I didn't really believe it until one of these trade shows where he actually brought this thing, but they were setting up a voice over IP network in Uganda because there's no infrastructure, so they were using wireless technologies and then using Asterisk to deliver the calls. And, of course, they didn't even have power, right? So they actually hooked up a bicycle thing so that you would pedal the bicycle and it would power the system to be able to make the phone calls.
Oh, that's cute. One of the things
you
I remember...
Actually build...
What's that?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things I remember in the early days when they first, pretty much when they first implemented time division multiplexing into regular phone service, they discovered that they had to put noise in because they were dropping the pieces where silence was so they could use that for other calls, and the call would go dead between words. And they found that so annoying, or people found that so annoying, that they put artificial noise on the line to mask that.
Yep, it's called comfort noise, oddly.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So you can actually build your own phone system out of Asterisk. It would work somewhat like a real telephone switch would work. I mean, it does basically all the various pieces of things that a big 5ESS switch would do at a telco office.
Which is so cool.
Yep. So, Kevin, why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay, I can do that. My name's Kevin Fleming. I have been working on Asterisk development on and off for approximately a year, and I guess what's it been, about 2.5 weeks ago, Mark decided that I needed to work for him, so I have accepted that, and now I am moving to Alabama to join Digium and work on Asterisk full time.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your job description? What do you do at Digium?
What is my title, Mark?
I think it's senior software developer, something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Primarily right now,
I focus on dealing with the community involvement, the bug reports and patches and new features that get posted on our bug tracking system, and dealing with problem reports that get reported on the mailing lists and that sort of thing. Once I'm actually working on it full time, I'll actually be implementing new features and new infrastructure in the system as well. But given that I'm not working on it full time right now, I'm focusing mostly on what I can do to just keep things running smoothly. So
when there's a problem, you're the one that gets a lot of the email and works on helping people deal with problems with Asterisk and whatnot.
I am one of them, yes. We actually have a crew, quite a number. It's probably at least a dozen volunteers from all over the world that spend probably 99% of their day that they're awake on our IRC channels and help the community with technical support issues, configuration issues, just general understanding. I mean, you can't go a day without on our regular users mailing list getting half a dozen posts from people who have just installed Asterisk for the first time and want help figuring out how they can get started. Where my involvement comes in mostly is once people have actually learned the system and have run into specific issues that they can't solve and they feel might be a problem in the code itself, or they have been told by one of our other support people is a problem in the code itself. That's where I start to get involved.
Uh-huh. I've also asked Russell if he'll join us too, who's the 1.0 maintainer, who can also talk a little bit about what's involved in managing the bug tracker. So hopefully he'll be able to call in.
He's on IRC right now. I don't know why he hasn't called in.
Well, you know, take a little cattle prod to him. You know, come on, get on the conference.
Yeah.
Someone was asking in the chat room, and I was thinking the same thing. Is Asterisk is what's doing this conference, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, actually, it's secretly on the North Health Switch. No, of course it's
not. Yeah, that's it.
We actually get people that ask us that sometimes. Do you guys run Asterisk at your office?
It makes sense.
And it's not just that either. I mean, the server that's hosting this conference is Digium's PBX. It's at Digium's office in Huntsville, Alabama, or very nearby it. However, I'm not in Alabama. I'm in Goodyear, Arizona. And so I'm connected over a public internet connection to that server. And Brian is also not in Alabama. He's, as you've already discussed with him before the show started, in Northwest Indiana, also connected over a public internet connection to that server in Alabama.
And I might add that we didn't dial phone numbers to get in either.
Right.
That is, we didn't dial 1-256 anything to get into this. These are actually just peer-to-peer connections between Asterisk servers that each of us runs and the server running in Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When you say a public internet connection,
so you're saying like a public. When you say a public, you mean like
like Wi-Fi or something?
Wi-Fi or even, you know, cable modem or whatever.
Right. I'm using my Cox cable modem connection here at my home to make this connection.
Well, that brings up a good question. Can you actually use, like, a Wi-Fi phone? You know, is there a way that you can have a phone with you in your bag, and if you're going to be in a Wi-Fi hotspot, can you make Asterisk phone calls?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's neat.
Cool.
Absolutely. I've got a little Wi-Fi. Pulver has this thing called a Wi-SIP, which is a little wireless SIP phone, and we use it all the time at hotspots at the college where I teach here. And once you've connected with it, then, I mean, the point that I was making about not having to dial a telephone number is kind of subtle. That is, when I picked up the phone here, the way that I got into the conference was by dialing 2-1, which I have programmed in my Asterisk server, basically makes a connection using Asterisk to the server that Mark is running down in Huntsville. So I could turn around right now, reprogram my server to make it, I dial 4444, and it would connect to this conference room. I could come back out and then change it to 5555, and that's what I dial to get in the conference room. This doesn't go over the PSTN whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing and cool.
But the nice thing is that is an option, because that's how I dialed in, although it's ironic because I'm using Vonage to dial in.
Yep.
That's what we use for our phone calls.
Very heterogeneous world out there, the world of voice over IP.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And of course, some of the people...
We use conferencing technology heavily. There's a group of, 20 or 25 people who have some hand in community development in Asterisk, who regularly, every Thursday afternoon, join a large conference call where we spend 2 or 3 or sometimes 4 or 5 hours going over open issues in the bug system and working on things that need faster communication than email or IRC can provide.
I take it
so
that
what that allows is,
excuse me,
you know, that allows that group of people to do that even across, I mean, as many time zones as the west coast of the United States to Sweden and beyond.
Wow.
At essentially no cost to any of them.
Right.
I mean, they all have high-speed internet connections already, so it's costing them nothing to join this conference call.
Mm-hmm.
Is the what is the limit of the amount of people that you can get on the conference, or is it just simply limited only by the bandwidth?
It's bandwidth and processor, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll almost certainly run out of bandwidth before you run out of processor if you're just conferencing.
Wow.
I think what, Kevin, it's typical to have as many, sometimes as 100 people in on that conference call.
Wow. How much bandwidth does it take
for
a call?
But there are people that do, there are people who we know of who do run 80 to 100 person conference calls, yes.
That would be hard to manage.
Yeah. how much bandwidth does it take each, you know, per caller? How much bandwidth do they take to join a conference?
You just asked the million-dollar question. Right
ah.
There. It depends on the codec that they're using.
And which transport.
Exactly.
They could take anywhere from as little as 9.6K in a very special situation all the way up to about 96K in uncompressed. Running over RTP is a single call. So, I mean, it could be very, very broad.
Yeah.
That's not counting any wideband calling or anything like that.
Yeah, can you...
But we know of people who...
Can I assume that Asterisk would support wideband audio feeding if you had the equipment to do that?
Well, it doesn't today. It's got a little bit of the framework for it, and that's certainly something on the roadmap.
Okay. I'm just thinking of something on the... I hate to bring up the name of a competing type thing, but like Skype and some of these other things actually have very good audio quality when...
Right, when right. Well, once you get off of... Of course, anytime you actually have to go through the phone network, that will not work. But
right.
Within the phone network, you know, there's definitely, you know, interest in doing wideband. And that's something that we have built some infrastructure to be able to support, but it's not something that we do today.
Okay.
Mainly because there aren't a lot of wideband phones out there, neither analog nor voice over IP wideband phones today, not counting Skype.
Uh-huh.
Do you?
Yeah, and there aren't any non-proprietary soft phones for Windows or open source even yet that do wideband. Skype is about the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you have any idea why things like Vonage and, I assume, some of those other codecs you were talking about, because you mentioned like 96K or something, what are they doing with that extra bandwidth? It seems like, you know, they're certainly not putting out the quality, again, because of the way the phone system has traditionally been. It's not very wideband, even under the best of circumstances.
Once it gets into the phone system,
But even if it doesn't, I mean, the point is, I just don't understand what they're doing with that extra bandwidth.
No, they're hoping to get extra quality out of it, but there's plenty of difficulties when you're doing calls over the internet having to do with the various choke points along the way and latency between the two endpoints and the amount of traffic that's dropped between the two sites. It gets way complicated, and even though they aspire to have a super high quality with the codecs that they're using, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't in terms of the quality.
Uh-huh.
You have to remember, a traditional phone call on the traditional public telephone network is a 64K bit per second channel.
Right.
And that is actually has some compression involved in it already. Since you guys are into this audio stuff, you'll understand it's technically not compression, it's just companding.
Mm-hmm.
But the net result is that they're able to use a slightly narrower channel, and that's the reason, for example, on the traditional telephone network that it's so difficult to produce modems that can get anywhere near the bandwidth of the raw channel underlying them, because the audio performance is not there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you move that over to voice over IP, you not only have the 64 kilobits per second of audio, but you have framing and IP overhead on top of that. And that's what Mark was referring to earlier. It can be 80, 90, 92, 94 sometimes kilobits per second of total bandwidth consumption if you carry the call in the same format it would go over the public telephone network.
Uh-huh.
So what we see a lot of is people that are deploying this in situations where their bandwidth doesn't even accommodate that. So they use one of the compressed codecs that actually bring the audio, the pipe size down. And there are people who have successfully run a roughly 10 kilobit per second voice over IP call over a 28.8 dial-up modem connection.
Mm-hmm.
Giving them the ability to basically call free around the world for whatever the cost of their local ISP dial-up connection is.
That is certainly pretty impressive.
Especially if you can find a reliable, cheap dial-up, you know, something for $10 a month or something, then you've done well.
Yep. Now
exactly.
We had a couple of fairly complex questions in the IRC before, I think even before 8 o'clock. Do you have those handy, Dwayne?
Well, I got a couple of questions. First one is is from Chris. Otherwise, I'm a space junkie. It's a real basic question, but he says, could you ask the guests to take us through what hardware we need to install Asterix in a home with a bunch of analog phones? So I guess that's where we kind of get into the crux of. And then Wayne was asking, does Asterix require special hardware other than a dedicated box? So if we want to go that way, I guess that would be a.
Great. All right. Well, I can probably address that a little bit. Asterisk does not really require any special hardware to run. It's just software in the end, and it doesn't have to be on its own dedicated machine, although, you know, generally people do for any sizable installation. Now, once you've got the software running, then there's the question of how do you get calls into the system? If you get them in over an IP connection, then all you need is your Ethernet card. If you're going to get them in from an analog telephone or an analog telephone line, then Digium, my company, sells interface cards that you can use to bring in analog telephones or analog telephone lines. So it's really all about how you want to get the calls in.
So with a soft phone and an Internet connection, one doesn't have to actually have any hardware. But if you want to try to talk to TDM telephones, then you're going to have something that sort of interfaces between the traditional hardware and the computer.
That makes sense.
And those are the FXO cards, correct?
The FXO interface is a foreign exchange office, and what it means is you plug in a telephone line into it. And the FXS interface is the foreign exchange station, which is where you plug an analog telephone into. So the FXO is a phone line gets plugged into it, and then an FXS you plug a phone into.
Okay.
The protocol quite like the way that terminals and stations talk using RS-232. One end of it is a station, and I forget what they call the other end, but it's the same idea that you have a protocol, and one side plays each role of the protocol.
That makes sense.
So frequently what people will do when they want to deploy Asterisk in an environment like you're speaking of there, like in a home, is they will possibly have one or two phone lines from their local telephone company, and of course their house will typically have analog telephone wiring of questionable quality running throughout it. So instead of connecting those telephone lines directly to the wiring in the house, they will instead bring them into FXO ports in their PC or whatever machine they're choosing to run Asterisk on. Then if they continue to use analog phones in the home, they'll put FXS ports in their PC as well and hook those up to the analog wiring in the house. And depending on how sophisticated they want to get with the dial plan they build on their Asterisk server, it's actually possible to configure a system like that that's completely transparent to the users of the analog phones. They don't know, they don't have to dial anything specially, they still get calls the same way, they still get caller ID on their phones. But, for example, that person may have chosen to open an account with one of the dozens or hundreds of internet-based long-distance providers for making their long-distance calls. So now when their wife, for example, picks up that analog phone and dials 1 in some area code and phone number, the asterisk server says, oh, well, I'm not going to hand this off to the local telephone company. I'm going to send this out over the internet to this long-distance provider that I'm using and terminate the call that way. And that's the way a lot of people get themselves introduced to Asterisk, is to start playing around with it in that sort of configuration.
So you use the Asterisk to facilitate your long distance, your voice over IP, without going through any, in effect, turn that into your voice over IP phone system.
Yep.
And it would do a least cost routing where it says, oh, you made a local call, I'm going to route that over my POTS line, but this call that's coming in now, you're trying to make is long distance, so I'm going to route that over the internet.
Well, right. Cooler yet, if you have friends like I do who have local phones in different communities around, like if you live in northern Indiana where there's nothing going on, okay, and it's real expensive to make local phone calls, I have an Asterisk box at my sister's house, and I have an Asterisk box over at one of my friend's houses, and after I put about 6 of these out, I now have, I think, 34 different communities that I can just pick up the phone, dial the 7-digit number, and call out.
Wow.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've heard of such things in
That's
the past.
That's a great idea.
People used to do some pretty elaborate hops to try to get from one community to another, and now you can basically do it with the Asterisk boxes, and save some change.
Well, not only that, but it's cool. See, I take my laptop with me when I travel, and so I run Asterisk on it. So wherever I go, as soon as I get an internet connection, then I have local calling back home to any of the communities where I have these Asterisk boxes.
I love it.
That
That's great.
Sense.
That's a great idea.
Now, see, the new thing about VoIP is that you're no longer tethered to one specific area code. You can have numbers in all sorts of locations if you've got enough friends.
I have 11 different incoming dialing things from places as far away. I have one in San Jose, several in New York, one in Austin, Texas. I mean, I've got them, and then plus I think I have 600-800 numbers now that ring in, and then I can differentiate on which number a person calls and answer the phone with a completely different voice depending on which business or which entity they're calling.
That is so cool.
Yes.
And you can also do different things with the call depending on what number is dialed to. And even in some cases, from which number was calling, we have kind of a famous example in the talk that I normally give on Asterisk that my friend Charlie put together where when his ex-girlfriend would call him from her cell phone, it would ring her home phone. And when she would call from her home phone, it would ring her cell phone. So whenever she tried to call him, she would just talk to herself.
I love it.
And to extend what Brian was talking about there, having multiple phone numbers, I don't know what your audience might be, but one of the applications that's starting to become very popular in the business community for this technology is being able to get what used to be called foreign exchange lines. So let's say your office is located in Chicago, but you have a sales force in Minneapolis, and you want to be able to have customers in Minneapolis call your office without them having to call long distance or without you having to pay for incoming toll-free long distance. Mm-hmm. So in the past, you would call your long-distance carrier and say, can you get me a phone number from Minneapolis that rings here in my office? And they would say, sure, give us all of the money that you have. But now, you can get phone numbers literally anywhere in the world delivered to you over IP connections. So you could have, a company that's based in Chicago have a local phone number in London, another one in Paris, another one in Singapore, and another one in Sydney, totally transparent to their customers.
Mm-hmm. And this is how
zone differences, of course.
And this is how a lot of the outsourcing stuff works, where they will, you call an 800 number, call a computer company, and they transfer you off to India, and you never know the difference.
Except for the accent.
Well, yeah, there's that. Hello, my name is Bob. How can I help you?
Yes.
And, of course, you know, most of these, well, maybe now some of these companies are installing Asterisk, but before this technology was available, they would have had to pay the phone company lots of money. They would have had to install a lot of, you know, proprietary equipment to do these sorts of things, and now that's not necessary.
Yep.
I want to point out we're speaking with members of the Asterisk development team at OnTech This. And I don't know who's all on here again. I know we got Mark, and who else do we have?
Kevin Fleming, Kevin. Brian Capuch.
And Russell.
Great.
Brian. Hey, guys. I just called in a few minutes ago.
That was probably that little ding we heard a while ago.
Yep.
Yeah,
there's a little enter noise when you come into a conference room in Asterisk.
Now, Russell maintains the stable branch of Asterisk. So he's definitely taken an interesting challenge for sure.
Definitely.
So, well, it certainly has been impressive. We've talked to a few people who have Asterisk boxes. You know, there's definitely, I think, one or two in the chat room, and we've fiddled with them occasionally by calling them, and they're
yep.
definitely interesting.
In fact, one of the Asterisk boxes that you know about, Tom, is REC's Dial-A-Stream.
Yep.
Where he's got, in fact, there's a couple of questions that we wanted to ask about basically having a person call into an Asterisk line and be able to listen to internet audio streams. There seems to be a bit of a problem with being able to accept a stereo stream or a stream that has tidal streaming in it. Do you know when Asterisk will have a really nice MP3 player in it that can handle like stereo or tidal streaming in it?
Well, there's already capability in Asterisk to do, I think, both sides, actually. We can both stream MP3 from somewhere else, or we also have the capability to have a channel that can act as a streamer, like to hit a shoutcast or whatever. I think it uses Icecast,
yeah.
Like okay. Yeah. So there's both pieces. So, for example, we could actually add an Icecast channel into this. I guess I don't think we've got the code installed on our PBX right now, but we could set up a channel which could call into this conference bridge and turn right around and stream it out over Icecast.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, the thing that REC is running is a thing called Dial-A-Stream, and what it does is if I call in, I can listen to this show. If I'm nowhere near an internet connection and I want to call his 360 number on my cell phone with unlimited long distance on the weekends, I can tune into Wookiee shows. But unfortunately, some of the streams I've asked him to add to the service are stereo streams, and so for some reason he's saying that his box can't accept that stream because it's stereo. It apparently can only accept mono streams. And the other problem is that if that stream has tidal streaming in it, let's say it updates the title of the song every time the song changes, for some reason Asterisk can't handle the change of title.
Well, Asterisk doesn't actually handle the MP3 stream directly. We use an external MP3 decoder for that. Typically, that's MPG-123, although there are ways to condense other streaming applications to produce what's required. But essentially, what would be needed in that situation is someone would have to configure MPG-123 to do the downmixing from stereo to mono.
Okay.
It already has to do resampling frequently because a lot of those streams are obviously not 8 kilohertz audio. So that would be something that would have to be configured there, and I would think that could be done. I mean, typically people use MPG-123 now to play stereo 44.1 kilohertz sample MP3s that are sitting on their hard drive as music on hold. So it certainly can do the down mixing. It's just a matter of configuring it correctly to make that happen.
Aha. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like it may be possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The, I was trying to think. We, There was another question that was fairly elaborate, as I recall.
Well, there was a fairly long one, which actually is the next one on my list.
Oh, okay.
But it, some of it we've, I think we've answered, and some of it we may not have, but I'll just go ahead and read it. This is from Charles. Right. He's a ham, N3CRT. He goes, can parents use Asterisk to have extensions of their home phone system with their kids at college or such? Does it tunnel through things like college firewalls and networks, and does the system like this work across the Internet?
If you run the EECS protocol, then it'll go through anything. If you run the SIP protocol, then your mileage may vary, basically.
And are you, when, the word you're saying, is that the one that's spelled IAX?
That's it. EECS is IAX. And EECS is a NAT-friendly protocol, very lightweight. In fact, we have an implementation. We have a device called an EECSI, which actually implements a voice over IP gateway on an 8-bit microcontroller with only 4K of stack and heap and 64K of flash.
Oh, my God.
I've seen it. It's a little box that's like the size of a pack of cigarettes or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's right in your pocket.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, that might be the reason why.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
You could absolutely deploy something like that in exactly the configuration you're talking about. Before the child runs off to college, you say, here's your little adapter. Here's a $10 or $12 analog telephone. When you get to your dorm room, plug it into your Ethernet connection and plug in the power supply. And a minute later, you can pick it up and have dial tone from the Asterisk server at mom and dad's house.
And that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty trivial to do.
Wow.
Yep.
That now, is so neat.
You were talking about how your mileage may vary if you use the SIP protocol and dealing with NAT routers and firewalls. I'm actually running, oh gosh, God forbid, the Asterisk port for Windows, Asterisk Win32. And I'm having a problem where I can call in using my SIPphone.com account and in conjunction with IP call, I can call my Asterisk box and get all the menus fine. But when I dial 1234 for my personal exchange or my extension, the person gets really choppy audio quality when they talk to me. It sounds really choppy for some reason, and I can't understand, you know, why the menus sound fine, but when they dial an extension, it sounds nasty.
Okay, well, I would start, of course, by running Asterisk on an actual, like, operating system like Linux.
We knew that you were going to say that.
Yes, we did.
Right.
We actually did a version for Windows that we called, well, it ran under something called CoLinux, okay? So it was only like 20 minutes put together.
Yeah,
right?
We actually tried that before we tried this.
Yeah, and it's called, it's Asterisk for Windows. So we call it AstWind, of course. So, which is also designed to sort of describe our feeling about what we think of Asterisk running on Windows in general.
Mm-hmm.
Try it on Linux. If you still have a problem, it most likely has to do with timing and RTP packets or something like that. But
now,
I certainly suspect the operating system first.
Right. Now, I actually have configured Asterisk for Windows. I've edited all the conf files and whatnot so that it would work. Can I take those conf files off my Windows box and stick them on the Linux box and just, you know, turn on Asterisk and go? Or do I have to do some more configuration that's separate from the Windows port?
Presumably, it should work fine. You might have to make sure that you don't have the extra DOS carriage returns at the end of the line.
Right.
Like, you might FTP it and use ASCII mode.
Okay.
Like, this would be, like, the one time that ASCII mode doesn't just bite you.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
For those of your listeners who want to try this out, there are also a couple of, I guess what you would call prepackaged Linux and Asterisk solutions out there. There's one called Asterisk at Home, and unfortunately the name of the other one escapes my mind at the moment, but essentially they are bootable CDs, not live CDs. They actually do install onto your machine.
I think the other one was Asterisk CDs Live.
Yeah, they will actually install a complete Linux installation with a working Asterisk installation as part of it, and in the case of Asterisk at Home, it even installs a web-based management portal and a whole bunch of other really nifty add-ons that are a good way to just say, hey, you know, I've got this Pentium 3 800 megahertz machine here with no other purpose in life. I'll just throw Asterisk on it and play around. So
Now, what happens if you edit a conf file and then the computer reboots? Do you lose that information, or does it save somewhere in the hard drive?
No, the configuration files are on a hard drive, and then they're read in by the running server and maintained as data structures inside the server's head, as it were. So if you reboot, it just, I mean, anything that goes in those conf files basically is loaded at the time that you load the files, and then it's in memory only then. So changing the conf files is permanent.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I was afraid to actually edit any conf files and then, you know, shut the thing off and then turn it back on and it's all back at its default is what I thought might happen. So
that's
cool.
No.
That's good.
Another question from our chat room. Hannah was asking, explain Free World Dial FWD out as a call termination, if anybody can.
well, the one that short term had a name that we can no longer say.
Yeah. Actually, kind of a funny anecdote. I used to own the domain bell-telephone.com.
And, yike.
One day I decided I would point it at the Asterisk website, and I didn't own it very much longer.
Oopsie.
Well, the idea behind the Free World Dial-Up's FWD out is similar to what I was talking about a little bit ago when I mentioned about how I have these various servers at different places where I have friendly parties who let me at their local phone lines. The idea behind FWD out is basically an extension of that, where people can basically, in a sense, volunteer to let their lines be shared by outside parties in return for being able to access the phones of all the other people who are part of the network. And so it's sort of like an extension of the concept of Free World Dial-Up, except that it would include then that the members of the group allow people to use their local POTS connections to make local calls. So you basically, at least in theory, could make a complete parallel network to the telco network, but doing the switching all using IP and then just terminating everything out on the local lines. And so you'd basically have universal long distance without any charges whatsoever. I mean, that at least in theory would be a possibility.
Okay. This sounds
right.
Like...
Well, there's actually something related to that we should probably cover here at some point, which is Dundee. Dundee being distributed universal number discovery. Essentially, if you think about FWD out or even services like Vonage and Service and so on, they're all sort of centralized directories of you know, where to go to deliver a call. And Dundee is a strictly peer-to-peer system with no centralized authority, at least not a company that's a centralized authority. It does have an agreement called the General Peering Agreement, which is much like the GPL. Which guides how people participate within that network. And it provides the ability for you to be able to basically call anyone else that participates in the network, regardless of where they are, without having to know what their IP address is just by knowing their phone number.
It's sort of, I guess, in a way, attempt to do something like what Skype is doing in terms of, I mean, it's peer-to-peer in the same sense that Skype is, but unlike Skype, it's open, so there's no secrets, no magic, and no possibility for shenanigans going on in the background like I always worry about any time I get near Skype.
Uh-huh.
But it's a peer-to-peer discovery protocol to allow you to find other people who will let you terminate calls for you without you having to know where they are or anything about their IP or anything like that.
Okay.
And you can find out about it at Dundee.com. Again, that's D-U-N-D-I.
Okay. Well, that certainly sounds good.
I'd heard something to that effect, one of those things where, you know, it's kind of a give and take. You know, if you provide something, you get something. And I assume that if enough people were to do this around the country, you wouldn't even need to buy a service if enough people had, you know, outputs, if you will, all over the country.
Right.
Right. And from what I understand, actually, the FWD out service is even using Dundee as one of its methods of doing number discovery around the network. So when you sign up for that service and set up your endpoint to be part of that network, that's the protocol they are using within their network to make all the other members aware of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly interesting. We ended up talking to Jeff Pulver about a year and a half ago, I think it was. And he was definitely interesting. And, of course, he's been doing this. I remember finding him back in probably 96-ish time frame on the web. So, you know, he's certainly been doing that stuff a long time, a lot longer than a lot of the other people.
Yeah, Jeff has really been a valuable, valuable person for the sake of Voice over IP, primarily, well, not just from his innovation, but also the fact that he has hit the regulatory end of things pretty heavily, because I don't know if your listeners are aware, but there are all kinds of issues come out of Asterisk and out of free calling and things like that within the realm of regulatory world, too.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard anything, you know, any of the latest stuff in terms of, like, Homeland Security? I know they want to be able to tap any call under any circumstances. I'm assuming that since most of this stuff isn't going encrypted anyway, that it hasn't been a big problem, but I'm assuming you could probably put an encryption layer which would immediately cause people to start panicking in Washington.
It can be encrypted trivially. There's lots of ways of doing it, but it turns out to be that that's one of the things I don't think that the Washington people are completely aware of yet, that any two peers on the Internet right now with the right protocol stacks on their machines can have a completely secure telephone conversation that's awful hard to even know the conversation exists, much less get at the content.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. I think the biggest issue from a regulatory point of view in terms of wiretaps and law enforcement and things like that are that the barrier to entry to be able to make and receive phone calls over this medium is so low now. You know, in the past, if they wanted to be able to wiretap calls, say, we'll pick Chicago again because it's just, you know, out of my head there, there might have been half a dozen telephone companies operating in that area with a specific amount of equipment sitting there routing their phone calls. And so if they wanted to be able to wiretap, there might have been 100 points at which they needed to be able to wiretap, and that was all. But if they want to be able to wiretap we won't even call it a telephone conversation, any audio conversation that happens to be telephone-like entering or leaving the Chicago area now, there might be 3 million endpoints there. So, you know, how it's not even practical to identify where the endpoints are, let alone do a wiretap in time to accomplish anything, unless the potential value of what you're tapping is so high that, you know, the NSA can get involved or whatever. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how the governments around the world react. Some of them have so far been, as you can imagine, extremely protectionist. There are some countries in Asia where it is a, you know, what would be the equivalent of a federal crime here to even interconnect a voice over IP network and the traditional telephone network at all. So luckily we don't have that situation here.
And I hope
thanks to Jeff Pulver in many respects.
And I hope it stays that way. You know, the
Pulver
decision and all the things. Yeah, like Tom had mentioned earlier, we had him on about a year and a half ago. It's time to have him on again, but he definitely has done a lot. I've got a question that it may be being in the process of being answered in the pound questions room, but I'll go ahead and ask it for the sake of being on the air. Ralph says, here's my question. We have access to 10 VOIP lines in the same area code. I would like to dedicate 6 lines for on-air radio talk programs, in other words, that are the lines people call in on. Can I set up, when the first line is busy, that the next one rolls over to an available line? And can I set up that call? Can I set it up that the call is automatically answered and the caller listens to on-air audio while on hold?
I'm looking at that question right here as we speak, and I think the answer to this is that the first part of his question about the rollover, Mark and Kevin, I hope I'm on solid ground here, that rollover would probably have to be done by the provider. They're all from the same VoIP provider.
Well, if it's coming in over Voice over IP, then typically they would just continue to send the same call over and over to you. So you would receive them all, and you know, you don't really have the same concept of rollover. If it's coming in over an analog telephone line, then rollover has to be implemented by the person providing you. But if it's coming over IP, then generally speaking, as long as they're willing to send you more than one call, you know, we just accept it and we can do whatever we want with that next call.
Yeah, my sense in reading the question is that it's going to be 10 separate lines. Ralph, I don't know if you can hear us here, but you didn't answer that specific part. I'm looking at the questions room right now, and that part isn't completely clear. As far as answering the call automatically and putting them right onto the on-air audio while on hold, that's perfectly, perfectly capable.
Yeah. And I think what Mark was and Brian were kind of alluding to there is you know, any of your listeners who have used any of the voiceover IP providers out there, which of course Vonage is one, and there's many, many others, they all offer different service packages, and in a great deal of cases, their lowest price packages will get you a phone number and some number of minutes, but it comes with a restriction that it will only allow one simultaneous call in or outbound. In a situation like that, if you were to sign up for 10 of those accounts, then any rollover between them would have to be provided by the provider themselves.
That's certainly
true. I'm trying to get that in for Ralph here on this. I'm not sure if it's – he says they buy their VoIP wholesale, and I think that probably means that we'll be – that what we're saying is all right, that the provider's just sending requests for termination, and you can just do whatever you want to with them.
Correct.
Ralph, hope that helps.
He probably will, hopefully.
Yeah, and he said he is listening, so that's great.
Yep.
There may have been some other questions by missed, and feel free, people, to either repost them. But I was thinking, I don't know how much time you guys all have, but we certainly have a couple things we want to cover. We're getting close to the top of the hour, but I want to give out a couple of phone numbers so we can take some phone calls as well. That way, if we have any questions, either people who are not in the IRC, or maybe we didn't get to their question, or maybe if you know that we didn't understand their question, we can take short calls because our toll-free number minutes have rolled over, and I've got that set up so that if anybody wants to give us a quick call, a quick question, maybe call in and hang up, they can do that at 888-350-2398. That number again is 888-350-2398, and our other number is, of course, available at 309-837-3400. That's 309-837-3400. Now, those are physically one line, so if either one's in use, then the other one will be busy, so because that is physically only. We only have two lines here, one POTS and one VOIP. So.
See, if only we had gotten this a little earlier, we could have set you up with some voice over IP.
Yep. I actually had a whole bunch of stuff that we just found out about this earlier this week, but I was going to do some stuff where some people could actually watch some of my servers on the web. I have a Astra server that's attached to a camera in my house, and whenever the camera running Motion, which is an open source motion detection program, anytime it detects motion, I can program it to give me a phone call anywhere in the world, and I had that set up to demonstrate, but it turns out that the logistics get kind of tough here for this format.
Gosh, that would have been neat to see, though.
Well, I mean, my problem is that all of my outbound telephony, well, all of my telephony right now is done over a wireless network that I built myself. Wow. And so I was fearful. I didn't know what kind of crowd you had, but it wouldn't take very many people to kind of saturate my wireless bandwidth, and it probably wouldn't be a very effective demonstration if the whole thing just froze up on us. But
no,
I actually
and that's certainly go. Been that's certainly been known to happen occasionally with situations, depending on what your bandwidth is like. Our people tend, you know, they're are a fair number of them, and they all tend to be very interested in stuff like that.
Yeah, you give an address for a webcam or an IRC server, and they're going to flex.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they'll be there.
You probably won't get slash-dotted, which is a term for being overwhelmed, because, you know, we don't have
right.
thousands of listeners, but you certainly will get a fair exercise on your network.
Yeah.
We are in our usual IRC server, irc.dishnuts.net. And once you're on there, the main room for chatting is #Wookie. That's W0KIE. And also we're taking questions over in #Questions.
Okay, if y'all ask me at the end when all the voice over IP calls that we have here are over, I'll hand out the website for my webcam.
Okay,
great. Well, we appreciate it. It's the top of the hour. We need to hold on just long enough to run our station ID, so if you guys would hold on for just a moment.
We have to break the station.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to break it.
So, if you hold on, we'll be right back. We have IDs.
the voice of McDonough County, WTND LP Macomb.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence, also known as SETI, is not the only group sending signals into outer space. We too are hoping there's life on other planets. From the internet to space, the universe, and beyond, this is the Wookiee Satellite Radio Network, AMC 7, Transponder 5, 7.5 Wideband Audio. Brought to you by Superstar Netlink Turner Vision. Their number is 1-800-395-9557.
For the best in talk, tunes, and more, this is RFD.
Check this. 100% voltage-free radio.